from there. And March always seems to be a little bit slow, but I do have a couple of stories that I wanted to talk about. The first one involves Apple, and no, it is not with respect to the little disagreement that's going on with the FBI. I'm purposely staying out of that that controversy, partly because I see both sides. You know, as a technologist, I can see some of Apple's points that, you know, if they do capitulate to the FBI, there is a risk that some hackers can get hold of that and use it against everybody. You know, customers buy the phone because it is secure with their password system, et cetera, et cetera. But then there's the, you know, FBI side of things trying to fight terrorism. So basically that's why I'm staying out of it, because I can see both sides. And plus, the other side of it is that because I'm not an Apple user, I'm not that familiar with all of the idiosyncrasies of the technology, and I'd rather not talk about something that I'm not comfortable and completely confident with. But what I do want to talk about that is with respect to Apple is they're having their Apple event March 21st. And so there's been some rumors flying. Nobody knows for sure, but expect, you know, a new iPad and a new, you know, MacBook Air. But the I guess one of the bigger stories is the iPhone 7 is news for the iPhone 7 is expected. The iPhone 7 is expected to be released later this fall. And a couple of the rumors that are out expect a better screen, as always, thinner, lighter. One thing that is interesting about the iPhone 7, or at least I found it interesting, in order to get it as thin as Apple wants it to be, they took away the standard earbud headphone jack, the, you know, what we call the 3.5 millimeter. And one of the things that they're kind of pushing is wireless headphones, so, or head earbuds, or however they work. So that'll be kind of interesting. The other thing that I do want to kind of mention, there is a YouTube video that's had like 1.5 million hits, if not more, that it shows the iPhone 7 with an expandable screen. It kind of slides out using carbon fiber arms. Understand that this is probably, most likely, a concept only and is not going to happen. And one of the viewers made a really good point. You know, you've got your iPhone in your back pocket accidentally. You know, talk about, you know, butt calls. You've got your, if it did come with an expandable screen and it's sitting in your pocket and you accidentally hit it and the expandable screen tries to open, is that going to break it, you know, when it hits the resistant from your pocket? Or, you know, I doubt seriously it's strong enough to rip your pants, but it's an interesting concept. If you haven't seen the YouTube video, just search for iPhone 7 expandable screen, and it is the first hit. And it does look like an interesting concept. It, you know, kind of widens it on both sides, and would make your phone, you know, more like a phablet without being a phablet in, you know, a standard configuration. But it, again, it's most likely probably a concept, nothing more than that. Although it, you know, it could someday happen. You never know. So anyway, March 21st is the Apple event. And for our April show, we'll recap whatever kinds of exciting news came out of that event. So next thing that I wanted to mention, there's been a couple of news stories that it actually came out in January, and I didn't talk about it on the show, primarily because, so for some of our listeners, it might be, what, I don't know what that means, but anyway, there is a plug-in for, in the past, pretty much all the browsers supported it, called the Java plugin, Java browser plugin. It has always been notorious for being a huge security issue, and hackers have taken advantage of it tremendously. And Oracle is the company, the vendor that kind of, you know, comes out, you know, Oracle is the vendor that does the Java plugin. And a lot of the browsers, Chrome no longer supports Java plugins, Firefox, Apple Safari. The only one that still does is Internet Explorer. But Oracle has decided they're no longer going to support the Java plugin. There's a lot of applause out there in the IT world. You know, thank goodness this thing has been, you know, horrific from the day one. But at the other side, there's an awful lot of applications, especially with IT infrastructure, that rely on the Java plugin. It does some pretty easy things. It's easy for programmers to use it to do some interesting things. And I know that for our learning management system at school, Blackboard, they had used the Java plugin in the past. Blackboard is now moving away from that as well. So it's an interesting thing that IT programmers need to start thinking about what are they going to do without Java. So what kinds of things might you encounter with the Java plugin? If you play any games online, a lot of those games are made possible using Java. The other plugin that is also starting to disappear is Flash. Flash also made a lot of those games possible. So that's where you might have encountered it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to Java. It's been around forever and ever. In fact, at one point, Microsoft also had their own version of Java. And, you know, I was talking to some of my students about this, and we were debating whether Java will disappear completely or whether somebody else will pick it up. And this may be something that, you know, Microsoft does. Microsoft came out with Silverlight to kind of be an alternative to both the Java and the and Flash, and there are lots of, you know, programmers that took advantage of that. Is Java still necessary? Not really, because of HTML5 and an awful lot of the power that HTML5 does with writing web applications. There's also other programming languages that can work, but sometimes we get lazy with what we're doing, and if we're comfortable using something, we continue to use that tool. And, you know, using HTML5 and some of the other newer tools would, of course, you know, mean that we have to go back to school, so to speak, and learn them. So, but I did want to mention that because I thought that was kind of an interesting discussion that I had with my students and the ramifications of what will happen with when Java disappears. So, next thing I wanted to talk about, and this is, you know, kind of going to get into a technology and sort of kind of an ethical issue, but lifestyle issue. And last show I talked about, you know, some of the newer technologies and how that's going to impact our world. I may have touched on this on the last show, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about it, and that's driverless cars. That technology is really getting a lot of interest from the car manufacturers these days. Ford just bought a technology to experiment with that, and one of the other things, you know, Google's been huge in the driverless cars. The other aspect of the driverless cars, just like with drones, when drones started getting really popular, the government had to come in and do some legislation with drones, you know, where you can fly them, you know, what kinds of things, because there's some risk with, you know, that sort of thing. Well, same thing with driverless cars. And so now the government is looking at how are they going to legislate the idea of driverless cars if they ever do become a huge thing. And I think, you know, there are those that hate the government getting into anything. But when you're talking about a technology like that, that does have a risk of, there's some risks of safety and security with respect to driverless cars. Safety from an issue of is the actual technology safe and is it going to prevent accidents? Security from the aspect of it's an operating system. And we know that if there's something that's got an operating system and it's got an application in it, it is hackable. And so there's that aspect as well. I mean, your driverless car could be as safe as could be as far as the technology and the control of it goes, but should it get hacked, there's a potential for, you know, causing accidents. And there's been a couple of, you know, fiction TV shows that have, you know, kind of touched on the aspect of driverless cars and getting hacked and everything. So it's an interesting thing that we need to think about, you know, all of the ramifications of a driverless car. Sure, you know, on the face of it, it sounds really neat. I can, you know, get in my car. I don't have to worry about, you know, paying attention to anything. And depending on how long your commute is, you can do all kinds of things, you know, read a book, you know, talk on the phone, watch TV, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But does this mean that it alleviates us from the responsibility of paying attention to what's going on around us? And that's a humongous other side of it. You know, that's kind of the ethical issue, is does that absolve us, you know, from responsibility? Or do we still have the responsibility to be paying attention to what's going on just in case the technology fails or something else happens? You know, we've already got laws against texting while driving in many, many states. And, you know, we've already got laws in the books for distracted driving, period. Does this add another dimension to that? Or is it just going to become a fact of life, an accepted thing? With respect to driverless cars, do the roads need to be changed in some fashion to make those driverless cars a little bit safer? At long, long time ago, I remember when the concept of driverless cars was being discussed, the idea is that there would be tracks or technology embedded in the roads themselves, and then the driverless cars would kind of stay on that track, and that would be what, you know, one of the safety issues or safety additions with that. The current technology is using GPS to center, you know, GPS and other sensors, sensing other cars around it, leaving enough space around, reacting to those kinds of dangers, and then of course GPS to get us where we want to go, so that, you know, those are all of the technologies that get embedded with driverless cars. But again, there's still the human factor involved. Are the sensors going to react quick enough if somebody encroaches in our space? Do they react faster than a human? They're computers, so conceivably, you know, the idea is that they should. However, you know, in some of the tests, there have been a couple of cases where the driverless cars have caused, have been involved in accidents, not necessarily caused the accidents, but the software didn't react quick enough when something happened. So there have been some, you know, some of those driverless cars accidents up in, you know, in the testing phase. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as we go forward. I'm still not, I think I had mentioned on the last show where my husband had asked me, would I ever use a driverless car? And I said, sure, if I was completely confident that it was, you know, 99.999% safe and secure and everything else. Yeah, it would be a wonderful, you know, boon to humanity. But then it did raise the issues of, does that start to, do I then use that time to do work-related things, and does that start extending the workday and all of that? But again, my key criteria is you got to convince me that that thing is 99%, you know, 99.999% safe and sound before I get into a driverless car. So everyone knows that I really, really love my Amazon Echo, or Alexa, as many people are tending to call it these days. So I also wanted to give you a little update on some of the newest features of the Amazon Echo. What's kind of cool about the Amazon Echo is it kind of updates automatically. It's kind of a seamless thing. And so Amazon is adding new features all the time, but also other services are automatically being added because Amazon has opened it up to third-party interests. So they're not limiting it. In other words, you know, it's not like you have to say, okay, Amazon, I would like to get in bed with you with the Echo. You can just kind of do it automatically. And so I thought I would also talk about some of the latest features. It's funny because every Friday, or just about every single Friday, Amazon sends out an email to its Echo users with, you know, news about the new features. And some of them are kind of fun and interesting. So a couple of the newer ones, you can now order pizza through Domino's through your Echo. You can use it to order an Uber car if you use Uber and all the time, you know, adding more and more features. But there's also a couple of new devices that are coming out for the Amazon Echo that I thought were interesting. Part of it is because there was such a kind of an outcry for adding the capability in other rooms. Echo has got some really decent voice response, and you don't have to be like right next to it, but you do have to be within the same vicinity. Well, what if you have a two-story or three-story house? You know, you have a family room down in the lower level, and then upper level is where your bedrooms are. And so you want to add some additional echoes. Well, you don't have to add the full-size Echo anymore. Amazon is releasing a new device called the Echo Dot, and it's about, oh gosh, maybe even a quarter of the size of the Echo, partly because it does not have a speaker. The Echo has a really, really, really nice speaker built into it, but the Echo Dot does not come with the built-in speaker. You can attach your own speakers using an audio cable or even using Bluetooth for wirelessness. But the Echo Dot does come with the Alexa operating system. So it's as responsive as the Echo. You can still use it to play, you know, music or set an alarm or turn on lights or whatever you want to do with it. And then if, you know, you do want to use the sound, the music and other audio capabilities, then you add your own speaker. So that's the Echo Dot. The Echo Dot, and interestingly, the Echo Dot, it's only $90, but it's only available to Prime members, and you need to order it through Alexa. So you would just simply say, Alexa, I'd like to order a Echo Dot, and that'll place the order for the Echo Dot. It is kind of limited quantities right now, two per customer. And again, all you have to say is, Alexa, order an Echo Dot, and for the Prime members. Then the other new device that Amazon is releasing is called the Amazon Tap. The Amazon Tap uses the Alexa operating system, but instead of just being always on and ready to respond to your voice commands, you actually would tap a microphone button, and then you can use the voice, use the Amazon, or the Alexa with your voice. It's a portable speaker, and it's Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. Speaker is very nice, has all of the Alexa voice service features, and the sound is 360 omnidirectional. And the Amazon Tap is expected to be $130. And the key feature there is that it's portable. You charge it, and then you can take it with you everywhere you want to go. So you can have Alexa wherever you are. Couple of new features that were added. Spotify is now on Alexa. Before we had Pandora, and then of course the Amazon Prime Music service itself for Prime members. But now if you have a Spotify account, you can also play Spotify with Alexa. Alexa before would read to you if you had an Audible account. Audible is voice books subscription. It's a subscription service and for digital voice books. Now Alexa can also read your regular Kindle books. The voice is synthesized, so it's not quite as nice as Audible. Audible uses actual readers to read it, and they, you know, emote some emotion in there, and some of them are even read by, you know, celebrities. So Audible's kind of a nice thing. I like Audible books on tape, so to speak, especially if I've got a long drive. It's kind of nice to use that to, you know, to have a book read to me. The only problem that I find when I use a book on tape is that I get lost when I'm driving, and I've been known to miss my turnoffs. I've been so engrossed in the book itself. But now Alexa will even read your Kindle books to you. Again, a synthesized voice, but if you are trying to catch up on your reading and, you know, trying to multitask and do something else, now Alexa will also read that. There are some new thermostats out now, excuse me, that work with Alexa. The Emerson Sensei will work with Alexa. And then Echo Bee thermostats also. Again, kind of a neat little thing all the time. More and more things are being added to the Echo. So if you don't have one right now, you know, it's really kind of worth looking at. My husband especially loves it. I loaded up Echo will play music from Prime Music if you're a Prime member. But he's an AC/DC fan, and there wasn't any real AC/DC on the Prime, so I loaded up a bunch of songs. If you have Prime, it does come with some cloud storage, just like everything else, and you can load up to, I think it's 350 different songs. No, it's not that much, but it's quite a bit of music that you can load up, of your own songs that you can load onto the Prime Music storage. It's not unlimited. But I did load up enough AC/DC, so now he, you know, he's always, you know, Alexa, play my AC/DC. And he just loves it. For a technophobe like my husband, the Echo is awesome because of the voice commands that are used, and you don't have to worry about, you know, pushing this button and then changing that menu and then doing this. I haven't had an opportunity to experiment completely with it. One of the things that I mentioned this in the past, that the Echo will use the if this then that technology, and it'll work with your Harmony Hub. I do have a Harmony remote control, and I've got it set for my TV so that if I want to watch Bluetooth movies, you know, I just hit the button. Well, Alexa will work with that, so you can actually use voice commands rather than using the Harmony remote control. You can, you know, just simply tell Alexa, Alexa, play DVDs or play a Blu-ray movie, and then it'll switch whatever different components are needed. And with my system, the upstairs system, so it'll kick on the Blu-ray, it'll switch the surround sound system to play the audio through the stereo speakers for Blu-ray, and then it'll switch the TV on and switch the input for the TV to the Blu-ray. And the Harmony remote will do that with just, you know, kind of a one-tap kind of a thing, but now you can use your voice to do all of that. And so whatever, if you've got a Harmony remote, if you don't have a Harmony remote, they're really actually kind of cool, especially if you have lots of different components and different setups. You know, for example, if you have a Roku attached to your TV, if your TV isn't a smart TV already by itself and you have a Roku, or you have a Blu-ray player and you want different inputs because you use a surround sound system and you don't play your regular TV through the surround sound, so your Harmony remote, and they're very, very painless to set up. You just simply provide the manufacturer information for all of your different devices, surround sound, Blu-ray, TV, etc., etc., and then you can just program, you know, different menu options, and it'll turn all of those different things on. You know, it's kind of a drag and drop, actually, technology. So now with Echo working with the Harmony Hub, you don't even have to push the buttons anymore. You can just, you know, do the voice kind of thing. Alexa will also find movie show times. So if you want to find out, you know, when a particular movie is playing, you'll find out the show times, the different theaters, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, I mean, seriously, Alexa's going to kind of make us a little bit on the lazy side. And maybe even it's going to replace Google ultimately. Instead of saying, go and Google it, now you'll say, go and Alexa it. That doesn't sing as well as Googling it, does it? So, music-wise, again, the addition of Spotify, Prime Music, Pandora, iHeartRadio. I don't know that I ever mentioned that Alexa supports iHeartRadio as well. You know, so you've got a plethora of music choices with your Alexa. Never be lost for it. You can also now listen to the Beatles. The Beatles have been added to Prime Music, so you can, you know, play, you know, everything and anything from the Beatles, if that's your thing. And they've added some, if you use the Alexa for the alarms, you know, wake you up, do whatever, you know, you can, you know, set an alarm if you need to set take medication at a certain time. There's 10 new different alarm sounds. So you can, you know, wake up to, you know, a nice peaceful thing, or if you're hard to wake up and you need something more, you know, jarring and more loud, you can do that as well. Again, you can use Alexa to find area businesses and restaurants, listen to sports. You know, you can even set a sleep timer with Alexa if you want to fall asleep to music as opposed to, or even an audiobook, you know, if you want to fall asleep to that as opposed to falling asleep to TV, which doctors say that you should not fall asleep to TV because it messes with the brain waves and you don't get a peaceful sleep if you fall asleep to the TV. So now you can use Alexa to fall asleep to music. And, you know, again, always, 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 I've never, ever known a device that is adding as many features on a regular, consistently regular, and quick basis as Alexa. So if you haven't got one, really, I strongly recommend it. So thanks for listening, and we will see you again in a month. Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Technology Matters with hosts Christine Lazzaro and Dave Snedeker.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW-Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for today's edition of Education Matters. As a result of the Racine Unified School Board being divided into nine districts by the Wisconsin State Legislature, for its spring 2016 election. I'm interviewing the two candidates for the District 2 seat, John Coates and Dennis Weiser, and the two candidates for the district seat, Michael Frontier and Pamela Handrow.